This is My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney. Francine Russo is a widely published journalist whose work has appeared in Scientific American, The Atlantic, and other major publications. She covered the Boomer Beat in Time magazine for over a decade. Through her research into late-life partnering and her own experiences of finding a mate again after being widowed, she's come to believe in the enormous potential we all have to grow and transform ourselves with the people we love. She's here to talk about her book, Love After 50, How to Find It, Enjoy It, and Keep It. Francine, you've built a writing career, at least partly, on noticing trends around you. So what trend were you noticing among the over 50 crowd when it comes to love?
Everybody I knew who was single was dating and finding a partner, and finding partners that were completely unexpected. I experienced this myself because I was widowed just before I was 50. And there were a ton of men out there my age who were looking for partners as well. And it occurred because of a demographic explosion, if you will, what people call the gray divorce tsunami. When I was in my 20s, I remember a friend telling me she was excoriated by an aunt for getting a divorce. And this aunt said, "I was married to your Uncle Charlie for 40 years, and I was miserable every day, and I never got divorced." Well, that changed. And one of the reasons it changed is what demographers call the longevity revolution. In a couple of generations, for many, many reasons, most of us were living 30 years longer than our grandparents or our great-grandparents. And people, boomers in particular, who were in their 50s and had been long married, thought to themselves, "I'm going to live 30 more years. Do I want to be in this marriage for another 30 years? And the answer very often was no. So people in their 50s started getting divorced in great numbers in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And this trend has continued unabated. So there are women out there who are divorced. There are men out there who are divorced. And of course, the usual assortment of widows and widowers, which gets bigger as people get older. So it was happening. It was happening everywhere.
And you started to read and research. What were you finding that researchers were saying about late life partnering?
But there wasn't a lot of research when I first started. There was an Israeli researcher, Chaya Koren, who did study late life marriages. And she found that she did extensive and in-depth interviews with people, usually who had been widowed, but in some cases divorced, who had found a new partner. And they told her that either the second marriage, and in almost all cases they remarried because Israel is a somewhat traditional society, either the relationship was different and not really comparable to their first marriage, or it was better. And there are many reasons for that, because older people, well, first of all, they are the people they have grown up to be. They don't marry young and find out who they are and find out who their partner is. But also people grow more stable. They have more of a sense of perspective. They know what they want. And so when they find a partner, they know whether it works. They know what they want, and it can be great.
You mentioned something in your own recollections when you started noticing this, that everybody was partnering up. You mentioned unexpected partners. I've seen you write about the phenomenon. I wonder if you mean this: the phenomenon of things that are deal breakers when we're younger suddenly aren't deal breakers when we're 50 or 60.
That is very much what I am talking about. And I want to tell you about an email I got just last month, a couple of years after the book was published, an email from a gynecologist in the Midwest thanking me for opening up her eyes to the possibility of being with somebody completely different from anybody she ever would have expected. And she's now been married to this man for 3 years, and she is thrilled. And I was so happy. And I think that this is the thing that I have contributed. There are a lot of good things in my book, Love After 50. But I think the thing that's really different is that I tell a lot of stories about people who have become open to relationships they never would have when they were younger. What I say to people is, look, when you're young, you're looking for somebody to make your fortune with, to be a parent to your children. You're probably looking for somebody that will be acceptable to your parents and your friends, perhaps the same religion, the same social class, whatever. And now, you know, if you're in your 60s, your parents may be dead, and none of those things matter anymore. What matters is that you have chemistry with the person and that you have the same values. And you can find that in somebody who's a different religion from you, who's in a different social class, who doesn't have as much money as you have. You can be incredibly happy if you only open up to these other possibilities. I call it moving beyond the automatics. You know, you go on a dating site and you do a lot of checks. Yeah. I want them to be this height, this religion, this education, whatever. Skip it. Just see who's out there and see where you find your chemistry and a sharing of values.
Chemistry and sharing of values. Okay, so now at some point, after someone has found themselves on their own, say they've done a certain amount of emotional work, maybe they've clarified their own needs in a partner or considered their own role in a divorce, you write about that. Or in the case of being widowed, maybe you've had time to properly mourn your spouse and feel stable, and now you feel ready to get back out there. How hard is it for a person who's potentially been partnered for decades, maybe from a very young age, how hard is it for them to start dating again?
It depends. What will be new, and for many people fun, and for other people a bit daunting, is having dates with new people, eventually going to bed with somebody new. And I give a lot of advice for how to prepare for that in Love After 50. But people get used to it very, very quickly. And if you're dating online, which I do recommend, it takes a lot of learning. And again, I offer people advice on how to do this. It takes a lot of learning and to be able to wade through all of the craziness of online dating. Because when I was first widowed, I asked 5 people, maybe 10 people, if they could fix me up with anybody they knew when I was ready to date. Mm-hmm. And maybe I had 3 blind dates. And then I went online and I went on Match.com and, you know, I filled in the usual automatics and I was looking for people widowed or divorced within 5 miles of me because I live in Manhattan. So there are millions of people within 5 miles of me. And there were so many appropriate, attractive, interesting people, some of whom lived a block from me, some of whom I might have stood behind in the grocery store line or not, but I never would have met those people. I never would have known they were available. And that's why it's worth wading through all the craziness online and, you know, just all the work. It's a lot of work to do online dating and to do it right. But it's worth it because that's where all the potential partners are. And there are a lot of them.
It's true. In earlier years, a lot of the ways we find our partners or friends is just from regular proximity. And that could be, you know, back in the day it was college. And for a large part of your life, it might be work. But as people retire and, of course, they're not going to school anymore, online dating potentially opens things up. A reminder that you're listening to My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange, exploring the creative potential of the second half of life. My guest is Francine Russo, author of Love After 50. Francine, can you talk about some common challenges with later partnerships and how people might deal with them, say, adult children?
Adult children can be the hardest. There are some kids who are so supportive of their parents dating, that they create a dating profile for them. And then there are others who feel rejected or disapproving or just totally threatened by a parent's finding a new partner. And to those people whose parents, you know, whose children are disapproving, when your kids disapprove, I say, don't say to them, hey, you're 50 years old, get over it. Yes. Say to them, listen, I know this is hard for you. It's a change. I want to hear how you feel, but you need to know that this is what I need for my life. And what I can't promise you nothing will change, but I will make some time when we can be alone together and do things alone together, so everything won't be changed. And I would say, don't listen to your kids, be sensitive to them, but don't give them a veto power over your romantic life. No, 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 no.
But do be compassionate toward them. Okay, striking that balance. Now, you've written for the New York Times about the trend of living apart together, LAT, and you devote a chapter in Love After 50 to the idea of structuring a relationship any way we like. We have this new freedom to do so. So once a person feels healed, let's say, and ready to establish a partnership, what's the best way that they can evaluate the financial, emotional, and really practical results of either marrying, living together, or living apart?
I think there are practical considerations. On the one hand, we have all this freedom because we can do what we like. On the other hand, we each come with whole life experience, and that includes real estate, money, children, and so friends. And so there are many people who want an intimate partner without sharing a home with that person, because they want to still have a lot of the freedom they had when they were single. And maybe their partner comes over 3 times a week and stays over or spends the weekend or home, whatever works for both of them. There are complications that arise when you marry, for sure, because then there are all kinds of legal obligations and financial obligations, which you can lawyer your way through, so to speak, by having lots of documents, a prenup and documents of wills and inheritance, so your money goes to your kids, or your power of attorney for health goes to your kids or to your husband. But there's a lot to figure out when you marry, and you have less freedom in that way. Now, living together usually provides a lot of the freedom and a lot of the financial freedom from financial complications. But even then, when you live together, whose house is it? Who does it belong to? If one of you dies first, what will the other person do? Will they get the house? So you have to have legal documents even in that situation. And you live with the person full time. So it's not that you can't go out with your friends or go out alone to see your children, but your freedom is less. On the other hand, if you love living with somebody, and if you love being in each other's arms every night and waking up together in the morning and having breakfast, then that's the choice for you.
Well, Francine, that's all the time we have. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about your book, Love After 50. It's available from Simon & Schuster. I found it in a local bookstore here in Ashland. Thank you so much for your time and giving us all a little hope and guidance.
Been a pleasure.
You've been listening to My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney. To hear more episodes about thriving in our later years, visit jeffexchange.org and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. My guest today was Francine Russo, author of Love After 50, How to Find It, Enjoy It, and Keep It. And incidentally, she's also written another guide to midlife. It's called They're Your Parents Too, How Siblings Can Survive Their Parents' Aging Without Driving Each Other Crazy. Thanks for listening.